Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It is the Hammer, Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt, and I'm back at you with this segment I'm so incredibly excited about. If you don't know, I'm sitting down with all 11 coaches in the MLR, and I'm going to touch base with them as we begin to build and crescendo towards 2025. And in an attempt to do that, I'm bringing you I think he's still got a lot more that he wants to accomplish, but maybe it's just a legend in my mind. But this guy, to me, is a legend in the MLR. He's one of the longest serving coaches in the MLR up to this point. And he's certainly done some amazing things with the Seattle Seawolves. And I'm talking about none other than Alan Clark, head coach of the Seattle Seawolves. Alan, how the hell are you, mate?
Very good, Rob. Thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the introduction. I hope I can live up to the expectation on the back of that.
You already have, and we'll get into the reasons why. I believe so, and I know so, and I know a lot of the fans up there in the Seawolves already familiar with your CV, already familiar with what you've accomplished and what you deliver to the MLR, but I want to make everybody else in the MLR just as aware, because again, your contribution to rugby in the United States is awesome, and I know it's only going on an upward trajectory from here. Is again, as evidenced by some of the things you've done in this offseason between 2024 and 2025. But folks, I want to talk a little bit about a CV for those of you guys who don't know Clarky, as he's known by Seawolves fans. Alan Clark, player for Ulster. In Ireland, played for Northampton. Did you play against Mike? And I always want to get caught up and say Mike Catt, but Mike Tyndall. Did you play with or against him?
I'm a lot older than Mike Tyndall. I did play against Mike Catt. So
okay, you played against Ken. Okay.
I think I'm older than Catty as well. So yeah,
that's right.
Most of my at Northampton in the 90s. So okay. Came just from amateur into professional. And yeah, wonderful days, and got to play against some and with some wonderful players.
Oh yeah, it's an amazing time in transition in rugby for sure. And that's when I started playing myself. And really that was the pinnacle of rugby at that time was in Europe, in the Prem and Northampton and Wasp and Ulster, and it was amazing rugby going on at that time.
Yeah, it was great. Actually, quick story. I had been playing for Northampton in 1993-94. Game went professional, as you know, at international level in 1995. I was on the last amateur tour with Northampton in 1994 to the Midwest, Chicago. So it's the first city I landed in, and the fun we had was absolutely wonderful. We went back, we flew back home, and we realized we were professionals the next week.
Well, I think you have told that story before on the podcast, and not that I don't like it. I enjoy every time I hear it for a lot of reasons.
It's a sign of.
Yeah. Well, I think I have you beat though, in terms of age, just for the record, I'm I think of it shade older, perhaps grayer too. Nevertheless, yeah. And the Chicago, the people in Chicago just love Ireland. I mean, yeah. When New Zealand came here and played Ireland, it was like 80% Ireland. It was an absolutely electric atmosphere that Chicagoans just love digging into.
Yeah, rugby's big in Chicago, and there's a huge Irish population, as you know.
Yeah, 100%. Now, a little story of my own, Clarkie. So a mate of mine who my kids had for physical education class here at the high school, he's Irish. His dad was actually the doctor for Ireland, for Team Ireland. I'll think of his last name in a second. It's my old age showing. Nevertheless, so fast forward to like three years ago when Ireland and England are playing Ireland is playing for the Grand Slam in mm-hmm. Dublin on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And this teacher took another teacher who's a wrestling coach, somebody I've known for a long time, football coach, American football coach, said, "We're going to Ireland. I got tickets for you and I." They went to Dublin and watched that match and watch Ireland win the Grand Slam. And this came back and he goes, "That was the most amazing experience I've ever had at a game."
Yeah. The Langstone Road, Aviva Stadium, as it's called now, is just, it's so, it's sat in the middle of the city. So as soon as you land, it's Grand Slam weekend, and it's a pretty special place to be.
100%. Dave Carney's parents, I met them last season. They're like, "Well, if you ever want to go, let us know. The boys will get you tickets." I think I'm going to tell my wife someday, honey, I'll be back after the weekend.
I own a minute. We've got.
No worries. Uh-oh, we have a visitor.
Yeah, it's Sophie. Say hello, Sophie.
Hi, Sophie.
She's looking for the Manx cat. So there's a new Manx cat in the house over the off season. His name's Rocky, and he's quite a character.
Rocky?
Rocky, as in.
Oh, Rocky. Rocky Balboa. Rocky. Got it. Okay. So, you had a couple caps for Ireland, so you're, capped international. Transitioned to coaching after an injury. Got on with Ulster as a manager, then an assistant. IRFU, player development manager, U20s, head coach, Ulster forward coach, went back to the Ulster setups, head coach of Ospreys, the Jackals, the Seawolves, and one of the most honorable, I think, head coaching positions, U.S. Combined Military Forces, that just competed this last November in the UK.
Yeah, that's pretty quick fire rundown of my resume, but yeah, very fortunate to be in the game for so long. I love doing what I do and have had some wonderful experiences along the way and some tough lessons as well, but it stands to you, and maybe we get a chance to speak about it, but I spent 2 weeks with the US military in November at Sandhurst in the outside of London, and yeah, it was a wonderful experience.
100%. We'll come back to that because I think it's such an amazing experience, such an amazing adventure, not just for yourself, but all the individuals that played. I know it was near and dear to many of their hearts, as I know a couple of those lads, such good men. Again, every one of them giving back to the United States in yet another way. But let's dig into the interview and talk about MLR 2025 here with Coach Clark of the Seattle Seawolves in just a moment. So yeah, we got the coach's corner, and let's dig into this. Like I said, we want to talk turkey, as we say in the United States, about 2025, in particular with the Seattle Seawolves. So, Clarkie, every season brings challenges. And what's interesting is I think there's five teams around the league who have new head coaches. You're, as we talked about off camera, one of the longest standing head coaches in the league, if not the longest standing head coach. What challenges do you see on the horizon as we begin to build towards 2025 in your role as head coach of the Seattle Seawolves?
Yeah, I think the challenge is an exciting one, in that the quality of the competition on the field and the spectacle for our fans, and the ultimate challenge to win is getting tougher year on year, and that's all credit to the owners and I suppose the frameworks that they're putting in place to professionalize the game in the US, to make their environments wonderful. And it's a challenge for us. You're always trying to get to the back end of the season and be in the mix. And as I say, it's getting tougher and tougher with the quality of coaches and the quality of players and the quality of teams and the depth of teams throughout the league.
Well, what's interesting, you talk about the idea of being the difficulty of being in the mix.
Lucky out. Right. Didn't realize he was under the sofa.
you talk about being in the mix, but it seems like, I mean, under your tutelage, the Seattle Seawolves always seem to be in the mix, always seem to be nipping at the heels.
Last 3 years, we've been beaten finalists, beaten semifinalists, and beaten finalists. So two Western Conference championships in 3 years. But yeah, still highly frustrated that we, you know, to get to finals and not achieve what every team's trying to achieve on an annual basis. It's frustrating. You're delighted to be in finals, but you know it causes a niche that. You're still driven to get that and the ultimate achievement for anyone or any team, and that's the championship in 2025. So I suppose each year in professional sport, there is a resetting. There's an evaluation of what you've done well, what you need to do better, and then you go again and you try to build momentum throughout the season and have enough points in the ladder that you're in a position to strike at the back end.
Do you feel any pressure? I mean, given the success the Seattle Seawolves have had, I believe two championships in their history, and you guys, you know, as you said, out of the last three seasons, you know, in the championship game, right there in the mix at the end in the playoffs, are you feeling any of the pressure there, or is it just self-imposed pressure?
When you're in a head coach, your responsibility is to build your team and get the best out of your team. And also you want to have a team that's winning for your fans and for your owners and everyone that's involved. So there's a degree of pressure, but like anything in life, you've got to go back to process and you've got to make sure that you're working well each day. You're striving to be the best you can be. What you do well, you keep doing well, and what you probably haven't done well, and you're going to know that as an individual. You don't want to repeat it. So, it's pretty simple. The fear of losing in the past, I think, when as a younger coach, it can eat you up a little bit. As you get older, you realize the importance of process and really focusing in on what you do well and what your team do well and what they need to do better. So it's pretty similar to all walks of life.
And isn't sport just a window in life too? So you take those lessons, can apply it to your own life and how you conduct yourself. What's interesting for those that don't know is Clarkie's not just the head coach of the Seattle Seawolves. He's also the director of rugby. And I think a lot of people are curious how those roles are distinct and what do you do that involves kind of that director of rugby hat versus that head coaching hat?
Yeah. First of all, I've got a great team around me at all levels, business ops and, you know, within the rugby operations. And we've improved on that again this year. We've lost some good people as well. Obviously, Letho got picked up by Chicago, but that's an opportunity for someone else. And we brought in Ian Watson, who I'm very excited about. So it's never just one individual. But I suppose the obvious distinction is that your role is more than just responsibility for the head coach of the team. I'm central to our recruitment, how we recruit, who we recruit, and making sure that we meet salary cap compliance. And it certainly doubles the workload, but I feel it's exciting also because you really get to dig deep into the players that you recruit in terms of their character. And their ability and ultimately their ambition.
Well, and I think that's been a hallmark of the Seattle Seahawks and perhaps one of the reasons why they've been so successful and consistent, you know, for 8 seasons across the MLR is just because of the kind of character of individuals that you guys bring into the Seattle Seahawks camp, right? I mean, you know, Reichard Hadding comes to the forefront of my mind, but also J.P. Smith. As well, just another one of those truly, truly individuals of great character. You know, Danny Creel, just a great, I mean, he's a young man to me, but a great man, just a pleasure to speak with and carries him. They all carry themselves so well. So I love meeting those lads. And we talked before we jumped on camera. I mentioned this to folks because I want to make clear my perspective. I always talk about the importance of American coaches, but I use American loosely because I think somebody like Clark, he's been so committed to rugby in the United States. We can consider him an American coach. He's developing American players, helping, you know, promote and develop, you know, coaches throughout the Pacific Northwest. So I'm curious, Clarky, what excites you about coaching in Seattle? In the MLR and in the United States on a much broader scope and perspective?
I think that's a really good question. It's quite a complex question because of how the game is connected in the US and opportunities for it to improve those connections. But without getting into that, I feel probably what attracted me to the Seattle team itself initially was the ownership and their vision for what rugby could become in the Pacific Northwest. And we're seeing evidence of that on the field and off the field over the last 3 seasons that I've been here. It's just that potential for growth. Becoming the governing body for the game within the Pacific Northwest, and that would be the ultimate, you know, as the professional team, the MLR team in this area. And I feel if we get that right, there'd be more of a pipeline, a flow of indigenous talent from this area into the Seawolves. And we're starting to build those connections. We've got work to do. We're aware of that, but our ownership are shrewd or clever in that you need to become successful in certainly within one element of the game and the premier element of the game. If you look at the best countries in the world at the moment, and you know, Ireland are up there, but a lot of our success has come from the national team, which drives revenue, drives interest, drives supporter base, and it's the same all over the states. Particularly in Seattle, locals, sports people, they want to get on the back of something that's successful, and the Seawolves have been successful on the field over the last 3 years. And as a result of that, we're seeing interest grow. Our local community club people do a great job also, and I take my hat off to all of those individuals who are working at grassroots, right up to, you know, collegiate football, and the energy and effort and time that they put into that. And certainly at the Seawolves, we understand that it's important that we have an open door policy for coaches. So if we get our coaches aligned and share best practice with them, that's only going to improve the experience for people when they're first introduced to the game. And ultimately, as a parent, you want your kids to come back from a sporting experience and say they loved it and they want to go back the next week. And that's all you can ask for in those early years. So the growth potential for me is the real driver for what we can deliver in the future. And that's going to add to the resources that the USA have in the future also.
Hey, folks, this is what I love about having conversations like this with Alan Clark, because if you really take and pick apart what he's talking about, you find some juicy morsels that you can incorporate into your own life, into your own coaching experience. And I think there are a couple there. And one of them, Clark, is, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. The successful organizations, the MLR, are the ownerships who have vision for something greater than the MLR team, that it's more about development and promotion of rugby, you know, in their area. But also making better people, you know, ultimately it comes to it. That's what sports should do, is make people better for having been a part of an organization, better from an experience than when they first started. And truly successful. That's why I just appreciate what you do up there so much, because I think there's a much greater vision, a much more bigger appreciation for individuals, people, and development of them. So I want to dig into the Seawolves more specifically. I've talked about this in all these Coach's Corner interviews, but for those who have not, who are picking this one up for the first time, I've talked about KPIs, or key performance indicators. And these are things that, this is a kind of a, I don't want to say a buzzword, but it's certainly something that a lot of teams are tapping into or using to guide and direct them as they head into seasons, or as they look at a broader approach like national teams do to that 4-year cycle as they head into World Cup, you know, years. So what are the KPIs for the Seattle Seawolves, or that you have for the Seattle Seawolves in 2025?
Yes, it's a pretty easy question to answer, to be honest. We want to be at, you know, the back end of the season again. We want to be in the championship game and see if we can go one step further. And I'm sure all other 10 teams have the same ambition. So we're aware of the challenge and we know what it's going to take to build towards that. And you know, we've got a pretty tough schedule this year. So that in itself is an exciting challenge to see if we can overcome that and be in the mix at the back end. I would also add that to do it with smiles on our faces, I feel we've developed a style of play now that players love to be involved in, our fans enjoy watching and get excited about it. But I really want to ensure that we enjoy our experience in 2025 more so than we've ever done in the past. And that can sound a little bit frivolous, but I'm at that stage that I feel I know myself better. And as a result of that, probably coach a little bit less than I did last year. And that may sound strange, but coach through coaches more. And coach through senior players more and really ensure that we're focused on the growth of the individual and what the individual does well. And through that, we'll be even better as a team.
It's interesting. You talked about two things there that I want to tap into. And one of them is about the players, and we'll get into that in a moment. But I want to talk just briefly about the other one, which I think is kind of relevant because the schedule just came out just a couple of weeks ago. And a lot of fans, and by the way, it's worth mentioning that the Players Association really were concerned about the schedule. I don't want to hit on the politics of it, right? It's pretty clear that the reason the MLR scheduled the way they did, starting earlier in February, kind of compacting some of those games in a few weeks, that the intent was to be done for by the internationals. The whole Shield competed for by the internationals. And that's something that the players wanted, by the way. Yeah. So, you know, and I think the league worked hard in order to make that happen. And they, and I want to just touch upon the challenges that you mentioned in your schedule. So just so folks know, you guys have an early bye week, I think in week three. So yeah, it's not two. Like you.
Week two. So we play San Diego away, week off, then we play Houston away. So that's a nice intro to 2025.
Yeah. And that's tough, right? Because you don't get it in the middle of the, you don't get it more towards the middle of the season. It's front loaded. But what's even more interesting, and I said it a couple of weeks ago in our podcast, where we talked about the schedule. I think, you know, San Diego, Utah, and Seattle have probably the three, in my mind, toughest schedules just because of the way their games are situated. So getting to my question, on April 18th, you guys play Chicago in Seattle. Then on the 23rd, so just 5 days later, you're going across the country to Charlotte to play the Anthem. And then you go down 4 days later to New Orleans to play NOLA. And then on the 2nd, just I think it's six days later, you play RFCLA at home. Then you have another tough stretch, which a lot of teams don't have, a second difficult and compressed stretch. On the 12th at Utah, on the 17th, this is in May, on the 17th against San Diego at home, and then stay at home on the 23rd. So my question, I think, and it's a relevant question for a lot of Seawolves fans, for people that join the Seawall and the 100 Club, how do you as a coach, how do you manage this challenge in the schedule?
You work in collaboration with the league in terms of fixture scheduling. It's not a straight line for the league because ourselves, like a number of other teams, we're restricted about availability for stadia. So you've got to juggle that as well. But that period of four games in 15 days is going to be, you know, a real test, be a test for any team in the world, and it's going to be a test for our squad. And I suppose it comes down to, once you know it is what it is, then you start to chunk it and start to break it down and start to attack it. And it's going to require everybody. We've got to get our selections right. To answer your question, you have a plan in your head, but as we saw last season, we picked up a number of injuries, and you don't get to rotate players the same way as you may have wanted to. So I suppose in the build up to those weeks, you may have to adjust and show that adaptability in all planning. And that's part of strategic success to get you to the back end of seasons. And you make some tough decisions based on where you are in the ladder, what's required and which games you target. But I also feel we've got a squad this year. If we can remain healthy, certainly more healthy than we did last season, that there's real depth throughout the squad, and there'll be an opportunity to rotate, and there'll be an opportunity to, manage loads throughout the season, so we're peaking at the right time.
You know, it's worth saying, folks, Clarky, you mentioned, I think, an important piece that maybe you and I get, and I know a lot of other coaches get, and that's availability of stadium. I don't know that all the fans really understand just how much that can play into that scheduling challenge that the Seawolves face, that other teams face, right? You're sharing a facility, and you guys probably share Starfire as a facility more so than most teams have to share their facilities.
Yeah. Yeah, and trust me, our business ops probably would tell you Clarky doesn't understand either, because I'm going. And they work really hard with the people at Starfire, and we've got a wonderful relationship with them. But it takes a lot of negotiation, collaboration, planning, and, you know, sometimes you're just dealt the cards that you're dealt with, and you can either moan about it, or you can, you know, strategically start to break it down and that's really my approach to life. You know, I'll exhaust all possibilities to ensure that we're getting the best that we can get. But once it's decided and there's no turning, I'm not going to moan about it.
Yeah, it's a very pragmatic approach. And interesting, as I've talked to coaches about the schedule, I think most of them are looking at it in much the same lens that you are. Like, yeah, we could moan about it, or we could carry on and get down to business, have a plan, and do the best we can to carry out that plan so that we can manage player load and we can have you know, the most success possible through that difficult stretch. But, you know, unfortunately, not every team has the advantage of a Houston, right, where they own their own facility and they can control when they play and what times they play, because ultimately they're the decision maker. 10 teams.
It's a wonderful facility. There's no doubt. But yeah, it is a challenge. It's almost like a World Cup, having 4 games in 15 days.
Yeah, it is a tough schedule, for sure. You were talking about players, and I want to dig into players a little bit with the next two questions. Seawolves, you guys have been very, very targeted, and it makes sense because you've been in this role going into the fourth season now. You clearly understand your leadership group. You clearly understand your roster, where everybody's at, both as director of rugby and as head coach. You understand the contractual components of your team that you built. But you guys have been very targeted in the new personnel this offseason. For those fans who are new to the Seawolves, or fans that are looking for a team, and maybe they're former Dallas fans and are looking to pick up a team, which new signings should Seawolves fans and other fans of the league be excited about that are joining the 2025 Seattle Seawolves?
Yeah, there's actually been quite a bit of transition within our squad, more so than I had anticipated or any of us had anticipated. And you know, without divulging too much, it comes down to managing your budget and the attraction of some of our players to other teams. It comes down to performance, comes down to injury, comes down to lifestyle changes. You know, a couple of the players, their wives are expecting, and they're overseas players, and you know, that changes the whole dynamic. Even Connor Mooneyham, his family have moved out east again, and you understand that as a coach, but it doesn't make it any easier. But you know, getting to our own squads, regardless of all of those challenges and the transition, I'm tremendously excited about our squad. I've talked about the depth in our roster and the balance to our squad, and I believe how we build our squad is, you know, it's up there with other teams in the MLR, and we do it within our means, and that excites me also. And there's a healthiness about, you know, the numbers within the squad, and as a result of that, I feel there's a good connection amongst the player group. In terms of new players, you've hit on Dallas, and you know, no new sport wants to be losing teams. But I've said this before, of the, you know, NFL, when it first began in 1920, only 2 of the original sides still remain of the 10 that entered that first season. So MLR has already gone beyond that hurdle and showed that it's got a strong future, and what it's going to be like in 5 years, never mind 10 years, I feel it's a huge upside to rugby in the US overall. But to our own squad, Duvall Kutsea from Dallas. We lost Joe Tifetti, and you know, we brought in a couple of hookers that we're really excited about. Depth in our front row. We've got three front row that, you know, in all positions that would expect game time this year. We've got physicality in our second row. We brought in OJ Noah from NOLA, who you'd know well. He excites me as a player. He brings a different dimension to our back row and a different skill set. So I think our fans will really connect with him. And you know, obviously we've got Ricard and Charles Elton recovering from quite significant injuries from last season. So we'll see them a little bit later in the season. So it was important that we brought in someone with that type of experience and firepower. In the backs, you know, Rodney Iona, hugely excited about him. He's an unbelievable person. Really connected with him, and you know, he excites me also because he wants to go to the next World Cup. You've already mentioned some of our own players, and Dan Creel, Cameron Orr coming back, you know, Ina Futi, Duncan Matthews, Devon Russo, but you couple that with Mike Cruz, Malachi Estill. I'm really excited to work with those individuals as well as Eddie for sure. So it's refreshing. I'm hugely excited about the men first and foremost that we've brought in, and then the player that they are. And whilst there'd be a challenge to get us up to speed and quite a short preseason, I have faith that we'll be in a good position at the back end of the season.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you talk about those individuals, but and you mentioned a nice balance. And I had to agree. It's the first thing that came to mind as I looked over the squad. You got a number of South Africans coming in with quite a bit of experience, particularly in the front row and the pack. And then, of course, you have a good balance of Pacific Islanders. You mentioned Noah, and you mentioned from NOLA. And Rodney also came from NOLA, of course, for fans that don't know. Two tremendous players that were really critical to their success last year, their first playoff success. And then the fine balance of American players with, you know, you mentioned Esdale, CC Mahoney, Mika Kruse. So, and of course, Juan Pablo Zeiss as well. So just some really, a well-balanced roster, just in terms of nothing experience.
That's, you know, and we've also got Mason Peterson coming back, who has done tremendously well to recover from his SCL injury. So he's, you know, he's like a new signing for us this year as well. And we really had to navigate through a lot of bumps in the road last year, quite traumatic bumps in the road. But this year, you'd like to think we're going to have that real competitiveness within our squad, but also a healthy competitiveness in that. Probably contrary to the days when we played, Rob, where you didn't want to, you know, be substituted. In fact, you weren't allowed to be substituted when we played, if we're being brutally honest. There were no substitutions other than injury. But even in, when substitutions come into the game, you know, as a player, you're going, I need to play every minute. But players are more educated now, and coaches are more educated that you got to balance and complement those minutes throughout the season. And yeah, they're always tough decisions, but we've definitely, I believe, in key positions got depth to our roster, and we're able to, you know, to rest players accordingly and get the selections right throughout the season.
Yeah, not to dwell on it too much, but I think you'd hit the nail on the head. I think players nowadays are much better educated about how important is to manage their own load, but to understand how their load is being managed. And if anything, South Africa has shown that way, that you can come on at 50 minutes, 55 minutes, and still have a tremendous impact upon the game. And it's quite refreshing, I would say.
Yeah, I actually just read some stats today of the number of players that South Africa used during the autumn internationals. And then, you know, the first 5/8 position, fly half position, actually use 5 different individuals, and that's incredible when you think about it, for a team that won 10 out of those 12 games since the World Cup.
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing. I saw the same statistic, and some reason like 60 players sticks out in my mind, but that may be a little bit generous, but it was quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a big number, and you see that they're building towards 2027 World Cup.
Yep, 100%. But let's stay focused on, again, we could talk all day, folks, a couple of old timers. But nevertheless, let's keep focused on the Seattle Seawolves. We were talking about personnel, but it's always interesting for, especially for the American sports fan who comes into rugby and they see the concept of a draft, which is relatively unique to rugby in general. Having been, you know, brought into America, and then that kind of American concept applied to it, if you will, with this idea of the draft. And we talked pre-show that you brought in Calvin Luai Lamunga from Central Washington. What did you like about him? What did you see in him? And is he a player that you think can make some contributions in 2025?
Yeah, what I like about him, I love the fact he's from here, first and foremost. Obviously, he got a skill set that excited me, but the fact he was from here meant that he was number one on our draft pick. We were delighted to get him, and equally, he was delighted that Seattle had selected him. So, to have a homegrown player, a player who's come through a really good rugby program with Paul Thornley at CWU, it's great that he's joining the Seawolves. I've only met him in person once. I've been impressed with his skill set. I've been impressed with him as a young man. And do I believe he can have an impact and get some minutes? Yes, I do. And I don't say that easily. But from what I've seen from him in terms of how he handles himself, he reminds me of a younger version of Pete DeLapetti. I'm really excited about his development and progress with the Seawolves. And as much for him, I want Calvin to do well, but I want Calvin to be an example to others from CWU and other colleges that there is a pathway to the MLR and to the USA jersey within your own area of the United States.
Yeah, and I think that's super important. A lot of teams are really trying to develop that pathway within their own carved out sections of the United States. And obviously with that selection from Central Washington, you're really trying to keep a player at home where he feels comfortable and you can get the most out of him because he has a support system, not just within the Seawolves, but within his family and with his friend group, et cetera. So that's refreshing and good to see that teams are really keeping an eye on that.
Yes, it's great. And it is throughout the league. And some teams are doing it extremely well at the moment. And we want to be one of those teams.
Agreed. So last question here, Clarkie, because, again, going back to the concept and idea that I love to see American coaches, American qualified, somebody like yourself who's committed himself to coaching in the United States and honing his craft and honing the craft of others around him. You've been incredibly active on the coaching and development end in the Pacific Northwest and in the USA rugby community. And I think people need to know about what you've been up to because it is incredibly and vitally important to what we're trying to accomplish as we continue to build towards 2031 and 33. You've coached the US military team, as mentioned. What are some of the most important efforts that are going on, not only in the PNW, but some other things that you're doing from a coaching and directing end?
It's more than just me. Our club, in partnership with Pacific Northwest Rugby and Rugby WA, we recognize that we can connect better, and we're working towards that. We're going to run some coaching workshops in January and February of 2025, along with Rugby WA, and Aaron Lee does a great job there. Kevin Flynn with Seattle Rugby, I think everyone in rugby knows who Flynn is throughout the States and beyond. Those people do a tremendous job for the growth of the game and the health of their clubs and the experience of young people coming into the game. So I tip my hat to their contribution, and we have a role to play within that. And that's probably the next stage of our development as the Seawolves. Aligned to that, I've had a wonderful experience in November. I was asked to come in and assist the US military and ended up being asked to coach them. But to people like Mark Drown, who put the mission together, if you wish, to go over and play against the British Army and then to play against the Royal Air Force, with a US military combined squad, some veterans involved in that as well. One of them who you know very well, John Cullen, who went on to captain the team. It was just a humbling, rewarding, and such a privilege to be able to give back to them and to see the growth in them as individuals on the rugby field, but something people won't have seen is what it meant to them off the field, and the camaraderie of rugby union, the values of rugby union, and the crossover of those values to the military, and being with your brothers, and really digging in for each other, and fast learning, and not moaning. I probably got more out of it than actually the individuals, and I wouldn't have said that at the start of the week. So the pleasure was mine, and you know, I got as much reward as the individuals. Definitely friends for life. And yeah, I've just had a missed call during this meeting, and from somebody who's highly involved in it. And yeah, it's an experience that has definitely made me better as a person, and I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Folks, before we went on camera, I just want to make you guys aware, in a conversation that Clark and I were having about his experience, he said two things that resonated with me, and they'll stick with me for a long time as a coach and as an individual. And he said, believe in humility, and he said he believes in others. And it just kind of shows you where Clark is as an individual and as a coach. And I know you don't like to have heaps of recognition bestowed upon you. But if you could just explain, because I think this was a wonderful recognition by the players of just how much that experience meant to them and how much you played a role in it and impacted them as individuals and as athletes. You had been bestowed upon you during that experience the album History of Sandhurst. Can you just take a moment for fans that may not be familiar with what this is, and just explain what that is and what it meant to you?
Yeah, you're definitely embarrassing me now. I can feel myself warming up here. But we had a wonderful remembrance service on the Sunday at Sandhurst, which is, you know, Sandhurst was formed in 1751. It's where every officer in the British Army has to come through before he graduates to being an officer, obviously. So we shared a remembrance service with him. We met the commandant afterwards. There were gifts exchanged, very meaningful gifts from ourselves or from the US military, and the commandant gave back an album of the history of Sandhurst. And a couple of days later, I was presented with it in the room, and the meaning of, you know, I suppose my involvement with the team. And yeah, it was, you could have given it to anybody in the room, to be honest. I was the one who's privileged to receive it, but I feel as if I received it on behalf of everybody behind the scenes who put that together. And I've mentioned his name already, Mark Drown, and it was his vision and his drive and his passion. He brought us all together. And yeah, I was blessed to be the head coach, but it's definitely something I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And it's got pride of place, in the front room, just for something to tap into now and again, and to have the signatures of the players, and that connection is pretty special. And, you know, more meaningful is, you know, those connections that rugby union's probably brought all of us. And, you know, I'm seeing that amongst fans, never mind players. And I think that's what makes our sport particularly special. And that 2 week microcosm of time, as I said already, is something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And I love the fact that we're all staying connected through the WhatsApp group that we were on. And, you know, I can't speak highly enough of it.
Once again, some just magical words, Clarkie, because just as you were saying it, I was thinking about it, that folks that don't or aren't familiar with rugby, that haven't been super invested in it, are just maybe coming into it. It's one of the things that, you know, Clarkie and I both know is true, and anybody who spent any time in rugby knows it's true. That's what makes rugby unique, this experience that he had, that connection that he feels with these players. Especially, you know, having done it over a Remembrance Day like Veterans Day weekend, made it so much more powerful, right?
Yeah, and to actually understand some of the experiences of the individuals and maybe the demons they were going through, and for rugby to save them. And I mean that literally, for rugby to save them, and to give them meaning, because as individuals, we all need a purpose in life, to wake up to drive us, to excite us, to motivate us and allow us to rest easy at nighttime. And certainly those 2 weeks together, they were more powerful than the experience and the wonderful displays on the field. And, you know, I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, with a number of sessions, a small number of sessions, we played really well against the British Army, didn't get our rewards, but the British Army are a wonderful team. They've got some top-class individuals, Fijian rugby players in their side. And the scoreboard certainly didn't do us justice. But to play on a, you know, a Friday night and then turn that around and play again on the Tuesday night against the Royal Air Force and to beat them handsomely, was a real testament to the character of the individuals. And you're not surprised about that, but just their acumen to learn from, you know, what we did well and what we can do better, and then to put that into a display. They've got a very justified win. And for me, it probably was never about the winning on the field, but ultimately those guys are winners. They've gone to a place in life that I've got huge respect for. And, you know, my biggest compliment to them is, in my whole time with them, I didn't hear one person moan. And they worked hard, they dialed in, they learned quickly, and they left it all out there on the field, and they got their just rewards.
Amazing. It's an amazing adventure, an amazing story within within rugby. If you haven't got a chance, I think it's still, the games are still on the Rugby Network. So folks, if you haven't checked it out, please do, because it was just an amazing experience for these lads and a coach, Alan Clark. So coach, thank you so much for taking almost an hour and spending it with us on the Rugby Rant and allowing us to share your wisdom and knowledge and understanding the game, understanding of life, understanding of human beings and how important the individual is as a part of sport. It's truly, truly blessed to have had this opportunity to spend with you, Coach.
Rob, thanks for the opportunity. And I say this with meaning, people like you have and do so much for the game in the US, and please continue to do it. I know what you give, you know, of your own time, and it's critical that we advertise, you know, the excitement of our sport, but also the value. And you do that handsomely.
Yeah, and we try to talk about that all the time, the rugby values and the rugby ethos, and certainly you represent that at the highest level. So thank you so much, Coach Clark. I sincerely appreciate it. It's been an absolute pleasure. And folks, we're going to keep bringing content like this to you as we build towards 2025 with the Coach's Corner. I'm committed to doing this because I want you guys to get some insight into these 11 teams and what this competition is going to bring come February. And I know I'm excited to seeing what the Seawolves bring to the table, because I know that they're going to bring it in 2025, thanks to a guy like this, Coach Alan Clark. Thanks again, Clarky. I sincerely appreciate it, mate.
Absolute pleasure, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And once again, you've been a part of the Rugby Rant, where we seek to build rugby one fan at a time. Keep checking back with us, and we will see everybody at the next.
Late Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.